please turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 2. We'll be in 1 Peter mainly this morning. We'll look at a few other passages, but we'll be mainly in the book of 1 Peter. Appreciate so much the willingness of each one to get out this morning. This is an exciting day for this congregation. I know the weather's a disappointment. The selection and then the appointment of new elders is an exciting process. I mean, it's a new chapter for this church. And it brings about some uncertainty, and it brings about questions, as it should. But I think it does bring about a sense of joy and excitement as well. And I will say at the beginning, each of these lessons do build on each other. And in my finite wisdom, I did save the most important one for tonight. And so I recognize that driving in the ice, in the dark, is awful. And some of you just may not be able to get back out tonight. I would urge you, please listen to that lesson before you go about selecting elders. I know when we look at things like this, when you've been a Christian for 60 plus years or 30 plus years, even 10 plus years, we can think, oh, we've read 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 so many times, I know what's in there. If anything, it's a good refresher, but I do hope to bring things to perhaps a different light. It's not new, but just to a different light this evening. And so I do ask you to listen to that lesson. This morning, what we're going to talk about is the relationship of elders. Now, in review from what we did this morning, the first hour, we talked about what is an elder and what is the purpose of elders. In a very quick summary, an elder is an older man who leads and shepherds and guides and oversees our souls. The purpose of them is threefold, so that they can labor, rule over, and admonish us and guide us as God would have us to. The question I want to ask for this hour is this. What is the relationship of elders with God and with the congregation? Now, you'll notice I had the conjunction with and not to there. That's a preposition, not a conjunction. I have the preposition with, not to there. We're going to look at this both ways. So what is the relationship of God to the elders and the elders to God? And then what is the relationship of the congregation to the elders and the elders to the congregation? We're going to look at both of these. Now, as I said, we're going to be in 1 Peter. What we're going to do just for the first few minutes is look at the elder and God. But then for the majority of this lesson, we're going to look at the elder and the congregation. So let's begin. What is the relationship of the elder with God? 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 25 tells us, "For you have been straying like sheep, but you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." We read this verse in last hour, but I think it merits repeating. First of all, Christ is the chief shepherd. The first and most important way I would say that elders relate to God is elders are patterned after the chief shepherd. Christ is the chief shepherd, the chief overseer, and elders then are patterned after his example. And we can't forget this. I mean, my major concern, and I said this last hour, please let's not get in this mindset of thinking that elders are the logistical leaders. They are the spiritual leaders patterned after Christ. I can't repeat that enough. We're not appointing logistical leaders. We're appointing spiritual leaders patterned after Christ. The second thing, and we're not going to look at this verse just for the sake of time, is that all are subject to him. Ephesians 5:24 makes the point that all are subject to God. And so I think the question, what is the relationship of the elders with God, is a fairly simple one to answer. Elders are subject to God and patterned after Christ. The authority of God is all-encompassing. The authority of Christ covers everything. Christ has all authority. And so if Christ says something, elders have no power in any way, shape, or form to go against it. Elders cannot go against the authority of God. They are subject to God as much as any of the sheep. They are patterned after the chief shepherd in a special way, but all are subject to God. So just for example, radical example, but let's say an elder were to tell us, you know, all of us need to go put some money so we can get that, is it $900 million Powerball? And then, you know, by the chance that one of us gets it, it'll boost our funds. We'll be able to do a whole lot more with it. But all of y'all need to go play the lottery so we can win that money. The elder can't tell us that. Now, I mean, I know that's a radical example, but I think it merits attention to the point. Elders just cannot go against the authority of God. Elders are subject to the authority of God as much as any person, but they do have to pattern themselves after Christ and after the example of Christ in a special way, in that they follow in the chief shepherd's footsteps. Well, that took a couple minutes. I think that one is easier to understand. This one's a whole lot more difficult. What is the relationship of the elder with the church? I want us to go ahead and read 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1 through 5, and then we're going to go in a bit more depth. Let's go ahead and read this text together. It's going to be our anchor text. 1 Peter 5, verse 1. So I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Now, when we read this text, I think, on the surface level is pretty easy to understand, and it does a great job of summarizing what the relationship of elders with the congregation is. First, elders shepherd and exercise oversight. I mean, that is how the elders relate to the congregation. They are the ones who exercise oversight and shepherd. Verse 2, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight. I mean, I think of any sentence in the New Testament, that one summarizes what the relationship of the elders to the congregation is very concisely. But then with the congregation, what we see is this. The congregation is to be subject. Going into verse 5, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Very simply and very concisely, the congregation is to be subject. Now, we could finish the lesson here and I'll go home after a 5-minute sermon. But I think it's a little bit more difficult to that in all practicality. Whenever we then try to tease this apart, how do elders actually exercise oversight, and how then is the congregation to be subject? This is a really sticky, tough, difficult, touchy issue. And it really gets down to this then. Whenever we look at this, Christ has all authority, but what authority do elders have? And I think this is the question that then complicates the matter. You can look in Matthew 28:18. Christ, as I said, has all authority. If Christ tells us, you shall not lie, we don't lie. If Christ says, you shall worship me, we'll worship him. If Christ says, you shall be baptized, we'll be baptized. If Christ says, you shall sing to me, we'll sing to him. Anything that Christ says, we are subject to Christ. Every single one of us are subject to the authority of Christ. Christ has all authority. So if Christ says to do something, we do it. But then with elders. Elders, I don't think, have the same authority of Christ. Christ is divine. Elders are human. The authority of elders is not as wide, it's not as large, it's not as all-encompassing as the authority of Christ is. And so then that begs the question, when do elders have authority and when don't they have authority? And so whenever we then try to understand when are they to tell us to be subject and when are they to exercise oversight and when can't they exercise oversight? When are we to be subject and when have they overreached their bounds? When have we overreached our bounds and not in subjection? When are we actually in subjection? These type questions are a lot more difficult. And I really want to tease this question out and go to it a bit more depth. Now, whenever we look at the authority of elders, I think there's two extremes. The first extreme says elders have no authority. And I would say this one is more prevalent in the church than the other extreme. Elders have no more authority than any other member. So whenever we have a meeting together, the elders may be able to guide and shepherd and lead that meeting. But ultimately, they have no more of a say than any of the rest of us. They're human for all. So their authority is the same as the rest of us. But then from the other extreme, elders have all-encompassing authority. So pretty much their authority is equal to the authority of Christ. Elders can make all the decisions. They can tell us all what to do. Their authority is just as encompassing as the authority of Christ. Now, when we look at these two extremes, I think they're going to try to help us get to that happy medium. But I think we need to first ask ourselves, which extreme do I lean toward? Do I lean toward elders have no authority or elders have all authority? I'm never to be in subjection. I'm always to be in subjection. I'll tell you my own self. I'm a strong believer in democracy. Classical, liberal, enlightenment democracy. Strong believer in it. I love the overall ideas of the Enlightenment and what it taught us, and I can go into this with philosophy forever. And so for me, from my Enlightenment perspective, the English Enlightenment, what it tells us is, well, no, all men are equal, and so elders have no more authority than any of the rest of us. That's my struggle. Now, it may be that you have been raised from a different perspective. I'm guessing as Americans, all of us lean more similar to that one. But I think we first need to ask ourselves, where am I? On this spectrum of elders have no authority all the way over to elders have complete authority, where am I on this spectrum? Now, let's begin with, first of all, elders have no authority. Is this in conjunction with, and is this in agreement with the scripture? I would have to say no, because elders do have a special level of authority within the church. First of all, turn with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 12. We see here that elders are given a special type of authority within the church. 1 Thessalonians 5:12 says, "We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you." This term here, as we talked about, are over you. Some say are rule over you, similar to the same term in 1 Timothy 5:17, those who rule over you. Elders are told, rule over the flock, rule over the congregation. The congregation, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but nowhere in the New Testament are the sheep told to rule over the shepherds. Nowhere in the New Testament are the sheep told to rule over each other. It is only the shepherds who are told then to rule over the sheep. So elders do have a special type of authority. And whenever we look at the term authority, again, it relates to that concept of ruling, right? So you have a standard, you have a measurement, you have a law. You have a type of authority then that's given. Well, another point from this, we looked at Acts 14:23 earlier, we won't go back to it. Elders are appointed. So some have claimed, you know, the authority of elders is limited by their example. So elders do have authority to tell me what to do, but it's limited to their example. So they can set for us an example of good works, an example of faith, an example of love, an example of what it means to be a Christian, but they certainly cannot tell me what to do. Now, I think by recognizing 1 Timothy 5:17, Hebrews 13:17, and then also this 1 Thessalonians 5:12 verse, all of these points, elders are to rule, but also elders are an appointed office. So my question would then be, if elders are just to lead by example alone, then why appoint them? I mean, why not just recognize we have good men and then leave it at that? Well, why appoint them through the process? And a third point that I would make of this is this. We are commanded to obey them. Go with me to this Hebrews 13:17 passage. Hebrews 13:17. The wording here is very strong. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls. We're told we are commanded to obey them. So let's deal with this first extreme. The first extreme says elders have no more authority than any other member of the congregation. Elders are equal to the rest of the sheep. It's a completely egalitarian system. Well, I don't think that that's true with what we see from the New Testament. Elders are told to rule. They're appointed office, 1 Timothy 3:1. And we are commanded to obey them. And so if I wanted them to claim elders have no more authority over me than any other member, well, I'm not commanded to obey any other member. No other member is told to rule over me. It's only the elders. Elders are given this special type of authority. But now then let's deal with the other extreme. The other extreme says, well, elders have complete authority. Elders have complete authority and can tell us everything they want to do. So anything and everything they want to tell us, we have to obey. Well, I don't think this one is fitting with the New Testament pattern either for a couple of reasons. First of all, elders do have limited authority. So if you'll remember with me, the authority of Christ is all-encompassing. Whatever Christ says, we do. The authority of humans is nowhere equal to that. In that, first of all, they are limited by God. Elders are accountable to God. We're already in Hebrews 13:17, the second part of the passage. They're keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Elders are accountable to God. And so the first constraint and the first limitation that's put on the authority of elders is they are constrained and they're limited in their authority by God. So back to that lottery example, if an elder wants to tell me, go out to the lottery and, you know, buy a lottery ticket, an elder can't tell me to do that. Because they're accountable to God for this. They're limited by their authority, by what God limits them in this. And so anything that God limits, they can't say. Well, that then begs another question. Is the authority of elders anything within the constraints of Christ's law that they can tell us to do? So long as it does not necessarily contradict the law of God, that they can tell me to do. All right, so here's the question. Some then say, I think we understand, here's where we are. Let's back up. Do elders have all authority? No, they're limited by God. This then asks another question. If elders are limited in their authority by the law of God, can they then tell us anything that's within that and that we have to obey? All right? So long as an elder tells me something that's not contradictory to the law of God, then that's what I have to obey. Well, again, I think we may be taking a bit wrong of a perspective on this. Go with me to 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2. Here Peter says, "Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly." This sets up the principle that he's going to tease out in the next two verses. What he says here is, elders are not to be under compulsion, but willingly. Now, this is not compulsed by someone else. It's like compulsory service that someone else is making them do this. What this is saying is there's some other motivation. There's another reason they want to do it that's compulsing them to do this rather than a willingness to serve God and to lead his people. Christ came to this earth because he wanted to serve mankind and because he wanted to save us and because he wanted to lead us and guide us. Are elders motivated to the position because they're compulsed by something? Or out of willingness? Well, you'll notice then in the text, he tells two ways that elders can be compulsed. Verse 3, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, first, not for shameful gain, but eagerly. So what is the first thing that can be compulsory for elders to desire to be elders? Shameful gain. The first warning that Peter gives here to elders is, elders, do not be compulsed to serve in this office by shameful gain, but rather do it eagerly. Be eager to do this work. Desire to do this work. The first warning, and I'm going to talk to you men who desire to be elders for a second. Those of you men who desire to be elders, do not take this position so that you can get shameful gain out of it. If you desire this position so you can write yourself a check, if you desire this position so that you can give yourself a little bit more money, if you desire this so that you can be in charge of all the funds that come into this congregation, you have no place at all as serving as an elder in God's church. And I say that quite strongly. If you are compulsed by money, and you are compulsed to do this out of compulsed by shameful gain, and you're compulsed to do this because you're greedy and you want money, you have no business serving as God's elder. None at all. The reason that an elder should do this is out of eagerness, not for self-gain, but for the gain of others. Not because I'm going to get something out of it, but because I can help others get something out of it. Brethren, I am afraid that all too often, what motivates men to want the office of elder, what motivates men to go after this charge, is not an eagerness to help others, but it's a desire to help themselves. The second thing he says here is this, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. So he says here, do not domineer over those in your charge. So the second way that an elder can be compulsed, first by shameful gain, second because of domineering. And I think this really gets at the two largest struggles that men may have in the desire for eldership. The first is money, the second is power. And brethren, I'm going to make another very strong statement. Any of you men who desire this office, if you desire it so that you can have power here, if you desire it so that you can be in charge here, if you desire it so that you can be the boss, if you desire it so that you can make all the decisions, if you desire it so that you can tell everybody what to do, you have no business serving as an elder of God. Because that desire for power, that quest for power is what's motivating him. And Peter gives a very strong warning against this. Brethren, men, those of you that desire this office, those of you that seek it, please do not be compulsed to do this by money, and please don't be compulsed to do this out of power, but be willing to do it, first, out of eagerness to serve others, and then second, by being examples to the flock. And that, brethren, is the men that God desires to be his leaders. Those are the men that God desires to be his elders. Those are the men that God desires to be his shepherds. And I think we oftentimes ask the wrong question. the question that we sometimes ask is, well, what authority will I get whenever I become an elder? What authority am I going to gain whenever I get this office? What authority, what power am I going to get when I do it? Well, brethren, let's answer this first of all. Please, you men that desire it, please be honest with yourself and please be honest with the congregation. If your desire to do it is for money or it's for power, please do not take on this office. Please do not give Satan a desire, a moment to seize you and to take your soul and to perhaps take the souls of others because you desire power. That's not what God desires out of his elders. What God wants elders to do is he wants elders who are willing to do it because they're eager and because they want to set an example for others. So let me summarize this. What are elders limited by? What are they constrained by? Well, I think the example of Peter gets at one real concept. Elders should not seek the office out of self-gain. They should seek it out of self-loss for the gain of others. Whenever you talk about the eagerness that's involved there, I think Bob and Andy could both tell you in way more depth than I can. This isn't the hunky-dory job that, you know, you get to go home to every night and, you know, you get to write yourself a check. You don't have to worry about anything else. There's no real stress with it. You get to do whatever you want. You may make a work list every once in a while. And then, you know, Richard could tell you stories as well that it's not a desire to serve self. It's a desire to serve God, and it's a desire to serve his people. And then let me talk to the congregation for a second. Brothers and sisters in Christ, what I ask of us, and all of us, as we seek men to select to be elders, we need to seek men who desire to serve and who are willing to give up themselves and who are willing to follow in the example of Christ in that self-sacrificial nature to serve his people, to serve God. Men, don't do this out of gain. Do it because you can serve the Father. And so then let's answer the question then. Ultimately, I reject the premise of the question, what's the authority of elders? Because I think we're asking this from the wrong perspective. Elders in the congregation shouldn't be asking themselves, what power does the elder get? What power comes with this position? The question that should be asked is, what opportunities for service does this open? Go with me to Matthew chapter 20. In Matthew chapter 20, I think Christ, the greatest leader of all, shows what true leadership is. Matthew 20, beginning in verse 25. But Jesus called them in and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over, same word, lord it over them. And their great ones exercise authority over them. So do you see how Christ views this here? You know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their great ones exercise authority over them. Very similar language to what we're talking about with elders. It shall not be so among you. But whoever among you should be my servant. Whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Even as the Son of Man came not to serve, to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Brethren, what we need to look for in leaders is not those who have the greatest ego, the greatest pride, the greatest ability, and the great desire for power. What we look for in leaders is service. In men who desire the office of eldership, what they're ultimately asking for is they're asking for opportunities to serve God and to serve his people. And brethren, it's a complete different perspective. What I'm urging us here is not to think about this in terms of power, but to think about it in terms of perspective. Elders need a mindset of service that's patterned after Jesus Christ. But then let's be clear with what our part is here. Going back to that passage in Hebrews 13, 17, 1 Thessalonians 5, 12, 1 Timothy 5, 17, what are we as the flock to do? We defer to their judgment on spiritual matters because they're our overseers. What we as the congregation do is we recognize these are men that we trust. These are men who desire to serve. These are men who desire to be like Christ. And these are men who want to help me be more like Christ. And because these men want me, their flock, me, their sheep, to be more like Jesus Christ, I'm going to defer to their judgment on such matters. Now, this is going to transition us then to how do we as the congregation deal with this? The final question I would ask before we move on is this. The question that elders must ask themselves in every decision they make is this. What would the chief shepherd do? What would Jesus Christ, who gave himself for a sinning humanity, do? What would Jesus Christ, who gave himself on Calvary for all the sins of all who ever reviled against him, what would he do? What would this Jesus do? And when we have elders with this mindset, when elders enter the office, and whenever they take on the charge, and when they go into this position with a mindset of service, in the mindset of Christ, in this mindset of the chief shepherd, rather than the mindset of power and the mindset of Satan, that's then how elders fulfill their charge as elders. Well, how then do we as the congregation respond to them? I've already claimed that we defer to elders because we trust their spiritual oversight. Let's go back to the words. An elder, an overseer, and a shepherd. Whenever we choose older men, what we're claiming is we trust these men with our souls to make spiritual matters. And what we have to do then is, we are told to obey them. We are told to be subject to them. How then would we respond? A couple examples with this. Let me say this before I move on to my examples. There is no hidden agenda here. I try to choose example that I think make this practical and examples that just came to mind to illustrate the point. I'm not trying to make any political point here, all right? But let's look at a few examples. How would an elder respond to these situations? Let's deal with VBS time. So that's something that Andy and Bob had already mentioned to me in the past, that, you know, we need to be thinking about the VBS in the summer. We need to be thinking about it. Well, how would an eldership patterned after Christ make this decision? Let's deal with our extremes first. First of all, if an elder has no authority, what we'd do is we'd have a big business meeting with the entire congregation or perhaps the men. Everybody would get a vote, and then we make the decision when it is. Other extreme, an elder has all authority. The elder would think, well, I know most of the congregation works in the morning, but, you know, if I do it then, that would really free up my night so that I can catch that new episode of American Idol. So I think here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell the congregation this. I'm going to make VBS at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then every single one of you must be at every single one of them, or I will withdraw from you. See how much power I have? Now, brethren, we may think that this is a little extreme. I've heard of examples that are not far from that. What would an elder that's patterned after Jesus do? The chief shepherd would ask, what's best for my sheep? The chief shepherd would ask, how do I best serve my sheep? And he would consider his sheep and think about his sheep and try to make a decision that's best for the sheep. But then, brethren, when the elders make a decision, we better be able to respect it. What about another example? Can't even see it up here, can we? What about sermon topics? So, two extremes again. On the one hand, elders can't tell me what to preach. I'm going to preach what I want to preach. Other one. Ryan, you will preach this sermon on this day, on this hour, or you'll be fired. Again, both extremes, not too far from what I've heard. Some examples. What would a chief shepherd do? A chief shepherd would try to understand, what's the needs of my flock? What's the weaknesses of my flock? What feeding does my flock need? What nourishment do they need? What sustenance do they need? And then, Ryan, we want you to help feed them in this manner. And then let's say, for example, they want me to preach a series on marriage, complete hypothetical. They want me to preach a series on marriage, but I think this is completely unwarranted. What do I do? I obey and I preach the series. Final example. Let's say there's a fallen brother. And I want to give this brother time to cool down because he's fallen into some type of sin. So what my desire is, let's give him time. But the elder then recognizes, no, what this brother needs is this brother needs a personal visit now so that we can talk to him and uplift him and encourage him. How do I respond? Well, I think what the elders tried to do is make a decision like the chief shepherd and ask what's best for the flock. I responded to that by saying, you know what? I'm going to defer to your spiritual judgment on this matter. And I'm going to trust you in this matter. Brethren, this is not easy for anybody. This is not easy for the elder. This is not easy for the congregation. What this is demanding of both of us is, it is demanding that we be self-sacrificial. It's demanding that we be in subjection to God. It's demanding that we all have this service mindset. But what does the elder do with the congregation? He doesn't have power over them, but he rules, he leads, he guides, he feeds, he protects, and he does all of it with the mind of Christ. A couple more points to make with this. First of all, when we read from these texts, we do see this clear example. We must be in subjection to the elders. I do want to read 1 Peter 5:5 one more time. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. All right? First of all, let me ask this question. What is the exception here? Be subject to the elders except when you don't agree with them. Be subject to the elders except when it's inconvenient for you. Be subject to the elders except when you disagree. That's not what I read here. What I read from Peter is, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. The first thing that we need to do is we have to be subject to the elders. In what we are commanded to do, just as elders are commanded to be self-sacrificial and serve from a mindset of service and not from a mindset of power, brethren, as the congregation, we have to submit. And I, from my perspective, think there are few harder or more difficult Christian virtues than submission. Submission, true submission, is difficult. It is extremely difficult. Because what it's saying is, I want to do this. The elder wants me to do something else. I'm not going to do what I want to do, but I'm going to follow the advice and the recommendations of someone else, and I'm going to follow him. Now, let me make just a couple of side points with this. Whenever we look at submission, I want us to note how it's looked at in the book of 1 Peter. Let's look at just a couple examples here. This term of being in subjection is used a few times in Peter. I'm going to read these verses consecutively. 2:13. Be subject to the Lord's sake for every human institution. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands. You who are younger, be subject to the elders. What's the exception here? There's no exception. What it's showing is that there's some level of a hierarchy, and the one who needs to obey, the one who's being ruled over, they need to submit. And brethren, this is so difficult. I do not want to gloss over this like this is just some easy concept. This is one of the most difficult Christian virtues that I struggle with deeply. Submission is hard. And brethren, I will note this. It is without fail that every Bible class I have ever been in, when submission comes up, the verse that one brother or sister always has to bring up is this. Well, we must obey God rather than man. And my question is this. When you look at submission in the New Testament, God gives no exceptions. Within the context of every example of submission, God never gives an exception. Within 1 Peter, be subject to the government. Servants, be subject to your masters. Wives, be subject to your husbands. You who are younger, be subject to the elders. There's no exceptions there. I'm afraid that what we do is we use this concept of being subject to God rather than men as an excuse for rebellion, as an excuse for orneriness, as an excuse that I can do whatever I want, and I'm certainly not going to follow the elders. Now, please don't misunderstand me. If the elder tells me, Ryan, you go out and you buy a lottery ticket or go get me some liquor down the street, am I going to do that? Of course not. But brethren, it's an attitude problem. If my attitude is, I'm going to obey the elders when I want to, but I'm not going to be in submission whenever I disagree, that's not submission. That's agreeing. Submission is, I don't agree, but I'm going to follow them anyway. And brethren, this is hard. I mean, whenever an elder tells me, If y'all haven't been able to catch on by now, I'm a little bit opinionated. And I'm a little bit strong-willed, Jessica would tell you. I can be a little bit loud at times. Whenever someone tells me there's something I need to do, but I disagree, it's hard for me. But brethren, what we have to do is we have to select men who we love and we trust and we say, you know what? I may disagree with you in how I should preach this sermon, but I'm going to preach it anyway. I may not agree with you on when you made VBS, but I'm going to follow you and I'll be here anyway. I may not agree with you on how we should treat this fallen brother, but I trust your judgment. I'm going to follow you anyway. One other concept on this, and I don't want to harp on it too much. It's not this concept of mutual submission. I'm not going to take the time to turn here. I do plan on doing a sermon at this on some point, because I do see this as a huge misconception from even gospel preachers. A lot of people look at Ephesians 5:21, which says, be subject one to another, and say, well, what this then means is everybody has to be subject to everybody else. So elders then have no real authority because they just have to be subject to us. Husbands have no real authority because they just have to be subject to the wives. Servants and slaves have no real authority because, you know, the master has to be subject to them. And so then what people do with this verse is they try to break down all of the other aspects of ruling and authority and submission by looking at this verse. I will say this first. I don't think that's what Paul is getting at in that verse at all. I think the best way to translate that verse is submitting some to another, and then he teases out who is to submit in the following verses. But let's just please recognize this is an attitude problem. And it's an attitude issue. If I appoint elders with the understanding that I'm going to submit when I agree, but I'm not going to when I disagree, we're going to have a bad relationship. And if we appoint elders who think I'm going to do what's best when it's best for me, not what's best for my flock, the elders are getting themselves into a mess of trouble. It requires humility. It requires sacrifice. It requires an attitude of love from all of us. A couple other comments. Whenever we look at what the relationship is, this is not a relationship of hatred. It's not a relationship of rejection. It's not a relationship of begrudgingness. It's a relationship of love. I want us to close with 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Excuse me, chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and who are over you in the Lord and admonish them, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves. With elders, what are we to do above all else? We are to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. And that's a good relationship. The relationship that the shepherd should have to the sheep is one of service, of self-sacrifice, and of love. The relationship the congregation should have with the elder is one of self-sacrifice, one of service, and one of love. I'm afraid that all too often, I've seen this from both perspectives. Have many faultings. Let us love one another. Let us be humble. Let's submit to the chief shepherd. Let's lead him. So let's answer our question, what's the relationship? Twofold. First, elders are to be subject to God and rule out of a mindset of service. Second, the church is to be subject to the elders and to defer in judgment in spiritual matters. So here's the question I want to leave you with. Before we go into tonight, for those who are able to come back. Who is a man that you would like to defer your judgment to? Who's a man that you can submit to? Who's a man that you can be a subjection to? Who's a man you can love? Who's a man you can esteem highly because of his work? Essentially, what would a qualified man look like? And that's what we're going to try to talk about this evening. But if you will, go and get out your songbooks, please. Now, I know that this morning's lesson has been pretty much entirely for the body here, for the local flock here, and that there may be someone here who's not yet in the body of Christ, who's not yet in the church, who is not yet in who's not yet in Christ's body. Be baptized in Him. Put on Christ's body. I know this morning when I've talked a lot about service, I've talked about self-sacrifice. One thing I don't want us to forget ultimately is the sacrifice of Christ. And that's the sacrifice that provides us an example in all things. And so if you'd like to follow in the sacrifice of Christ, to follow in His example, please come forward now while we stand and while we sing.